General Government. It's Thursday, June 7th. We have planned a couple of items this morning. We have House Bill 2901 as amended in the Ways and Means Subcommittee on the 6th?
On the 6th.
June 5th in this committee. We're planning a work session on that. And we also have scheduled a work session on the governor's office budget. That's 5026. But to begin with, I'm going to open the work session on the governor's office, House Bill 5026. And I have Representative Dahlem and Representative Boone, who I'm going to invite up for testimony. Since they're here, and I think their subject of discussion will be, will have to do with the Office of Rural Policy, sort of thing. And with that, representatives, whichever one wishes to lead off, may do so as we speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. John Dahlem, House District 59. Rural Oregon, Sherman, Gillum, Grant, even a frontier county, Wheeler. Representative Boone said, you go first, you're most prepared. I've been scratching notes since early this morning, so prepared might not be the term, colleague.
Representative Dahlem.
Yes.
Having spent a little over, you know, a short hour with you, I can vouch for the fact that you weren't spending the entire morning scratching notes, but we'll let that go.
Thank you, Representative Dinkin. You're so kind. I want to tell you what's in it, and I'm looking at the governor's budget, 5026, and a little disjointed and a little bit emotional about this issue. I want to try and tell you what's in it for the governor, what's in it for the state, and what's in it for rural Oregon. In the governor's office, they have an opportunity, and we're talking about the Office of Rural Policy, and not its presence in the government's budget, but its absence. This office gives us an opportunity to explain the complex geography, climate, and general ambiance of rural Oregon. Let me give you an example. During the interim, I worked on small school funding. We have what are called remote but necessary schools. If you live in rural Oregon, that makes a lot of sense. There are some that can't be accessed. Even though they're adjacent to one another on a map, they can't be accessed easily one to another. Fossil to Condon, there's a big hole between the two. When you have an office where this can be explained, it makes presenting rural notions much simpler. We also have problems of logistics. And this office is a vehicle to bring understanding to the governor's office. For example, we had senior services offered, and there was an attempt to cut our officer because of per capita serving to half time. But the number of people served is not the issue. The number of miles traveled is the issue. We don't deal with people as much as we do logistics and geography. By bringing Bruce Goldberg through the governor's office out to Fossil, the meeting was abbreviated because he could see as soon as he came into the room that we deal with distance, not people. And as a result, July 1st, we will have a different allocating procedure for rural Oregon than we have for urban Oregon. Also want to talk to you about Veterans Affairs. We had one half-time veterans officer for three counties, and that makes perfect sense. If you look at a sociogram and talk about number of people per officer. But when you look at a topographical map, it makes no sense at all. Our new officer out there has uncovered people that need, absolutely need, veteran services. And without the extra half time, what we often say in our country that most of the time is in a car with a pumper. You're drinking coffee and listening to the radio. That's what you have to do. And this office helps us with that. I also want to talk about this office in closing, and there's often referred to as the urban-rural divide. It's real. It does exist. Monday, maybe even late today, I'm going to talk on the floor of the House about farrowing pigs. Now, we have a bill that says you can't put a sow in a crate to have pigs. We don't do that in Oregon. You do that if you're in 4-H. And young people will get a pig and then look at the pig and determine part of the issue of raising that animal and showing that animal in the fair. And the fair is a big deal to us. You're going to try and bring that pig to a perfect market weight, 260 to 280 pounds. You're going to, and if you're going to have, if you're going to show piglets, then you're going to decide the best birth process. And we have a bill in this legislature that's going to make that illegal. And it's due to a lack of understanding of what it means to raise a pig. Putting a sow in a crate when she has pigs protects the piglets. On the floor this morning, you're going to hear me talk about Wilbur. Wilbur was lucky he lived. Orville, his brother, got stepped on. If you don't understand that, then this law makes no sense. We need this office. We need this office for a coherent discussion, not of our differences, but of our similarities. A superintendent from Portland came out to our district. And so, and we found that 13 of our schools, a lot more than 13, by the way, but 13 that are on the ropes. And she saw in a moment, she has more kids absent from first period than we have in all 13 of those schools put together. And with the Office of Rural Policy, we have a vehicle, we had a vehicle to bring Vicki to our country. And to see that our shrinking enrollment has the same impact on a tiny school that it does on a big one. We also feel as though we've been, and I use the word in all its full meaning, betrayed. There was an attempt to put into legislation the Office of Rural Policy. We were asked if that could be left to the governor as his decision. I believe Senator Farioli had the bill ready and had the votes two sessions ago, maybe three. We did that. The office was established. We've made some progress. We can make a lot more, and that's not the question. But the point is, now that the office has served its purpose, we're going to do it in. And we do feel betrayed. Executive Order 404 established this office. It has been funded primarily with grants, but there is some general fund money involved. I can think of no better way to spend general fund money than to close the divide that truly does exist between urban and rural Oregon. The Rural Policy Committee should be funded. It should be funded not only for the accomplishments that it has made, but it should be funded for the promise that it holds for rural and urban Oregon. Promise in outreach, promise for cooperation. With an increase of the governor's budget of 27%, we ought to be able to find one half of one FTE to staff this office. We need a voice from rural Oregon in the governor's office. Please, don't abandon us now. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Thank you for your very provocative testimony, and I think many of us on this panel come from rural places, and we understand exactly what you're talking about. I also served on the Office of Rural Policy when I was in the House and it was first formed. And I think that the points you made are very valid. The difficulty that I have is the disconnect between the symbology of the office and accomplishment. When we asked the office, this panel did, to come forward with a list of accomplishments, it was a lot of stuff sort of in progress. And I'm not sure that it takes an office to extend an invitation to Dr. Goldberg to come to Eastern Oregon or to extend an invitation to Vicki Phillips. And I don't know whether the office facilitated those visits. Did it?
They were involved. And I see your point, Senator, but... for me, as a legislator, facilitating that process is very, very easy. We have access. But when you're in rural Oregon and you know that there's an office in the governor's office for rural policy, I think it opens up. 13 meetings a year, I think that it brings our citizenry, or has the opportunity to bring our citizenry into the office.
But my experience is it hasn't. And so let me ask you this. If it turns out, because now there's obviously been, I'm going to assume that most of the people in this room are here to talk about preserving what I think is a symbol rather than a performance. And we in this building talk all the time about wanting accountability, bang for the buck, a demonstration that public money is being well spent. If this office gets a reprieve, how would you feel about some performance standards that they were expected to make? And if they didn't make them, we cut this loose. Because right now, I think what we're doing is playing on each other's heartstrings about rural Oregon, and if you don't fund the office, you've abandoned the values of rural Oregon. And what I'm saying is I think it's unbelievably patronizing to have an office that's supposed to represent rural Oregon, and it cannot come forward with a list of accomplishments. We don't know what they're doing. To the best of my knowledge, they haven't informed any policy decisions. They're not advocating any substantial legislation. It feels like assets in search of a mission. And if it turns out that they get a reprieve this time, I just would like your opinion about some really significant performance measures so that there could be a thoughtful report back about exactly what are we buying for $300,000+.
Senator, I would be delighted to help in the process of drafting the performance standards, and I would say to you, in 2 years, if those performance standards aren't met, I will sit at this table and concur with you. Very well, I would.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And I'm also here to support this office, funding for this office. And I always like going last because the points have been made, and even Senator Johnson has made somewhat of an offer, and I would concur with that too. But I wanted to say I spent years and years working in child abuse prevention. And after 10 years in treatment and doing treatment. And I went to prevention because even though it was impossible to prove that it works, it does work. And now, after all these years, it's starting to show up. And we're using a lot of those measures that we worked on all those years in prevention and behind the scenes. And we're seeing them being implemented in some of our programs here at the state. And I'd like to see the same thing happen with this. As Representative Dallum has said, there has been this urban-rural divide forever. And we have, basically all of you on the committee are from a rural area, at least partially in your districts. So you do understand. We're not speaking to the unknowns here. But it's hard to prove, even though it's symbolic in a sense, that this is a step forward for the governor's office, who serves the whole state, to show that, yes, indeed, he does embrace all of the state. And I serve now on the Rural Policy Advisory Committee after Senator Johnson stepped off, but it took me about 4.5 months to get on it. I was begging for the seat. And you might ask why, and it's because I've spent a lot of time working with both sides of the state on a lot of issues, natural resource issues, even though I come from the coast, and also trying to facilitate exchanges between members from opposite sides of the state so that we can understand each other's districts and what needs there are and how they apply to what we do here. And this office, in my experience, has done as good a job as they can with the part-time person that they have, who's their own staff person too. And I think that they started out, the office, Jim Osamano started out with a staff person and eventually lost her. And I went to all those meetings, as many as I could, held around the state. And it's a long process. It's been a couple of years now, and it's taken a long time to build some of the rapport that we have around the state with different areas, and just to prove that this state is one state. And it's hard to say we need to produce a product, because I think there is a product in the report to the legislature, and you all probably get multitudes of emails from his office and links to articles of information that the group thought was important for people to see and hear about, as well as some of the connections between the federal government and those issues that we face, the biggest one being the Farm Bill right now. So to wrap it up, I would agree with my colleague and say, you know, shamelessly beg you to continue this office. Let it do its job, because it's coming into it, and to create some performance measures, and if, you know, and I'd be happy to work on them too, and work with the office and any of you who want to, or take your ideas into it. And I think that's a reasonable solution to this issue, and I hope that you will let us tug your heartstrings just a little bit here. So thank you.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably going to make more of a statement than a question, but I've actually had this on my mind off and on for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and you know, some of us are from semi-rural areas, not really truly rural. Truly rural is out in eastern Oregon, along the Oregon coast and some other areas. And the Office of Rural Policy, I think, was more than symbolic when they started. It's only been 2 or 3 years. It was a way to have rural communities have a real voice at the executive level of the governor's office, have an opportunity to really start expressing some views and issues that were particularly concerning to them. Those are nebulous things to measure. There may be a lot of different issues that come up that you just take part in a conversation on and try to represent your point of view. And I'm not sure they can be measured well, nor were they well presented to this committee, and that's not any kind of reflection on anybody. It's just a hard thing to bring forward. The other thing is, this is about a 3-year-old program from what I gather here, and the very issues that you're talking about of distance and difficulty of getting together with people probably has somewhat restricted this group to get together and have an opportunity to start fleshing out what they think they should be doing, what issues they should be bringing forward. It's not like driving across town and having a meeting with 15 people and driving across town again and having 15 more people. You can spend days trying to get from one place to the other and trying to line people up for discussions. My district used to stretch from the California border 3 hours north. And believe me, I have a feeling what that meant when we tried to get meetings going on a single day. I've been moved by what you said this morning, and we will, from my point of view, I want to reconsider this. I think having some performance measures carefully crafted would be very valuable, but we need to be careful with those, because this is going to be trying to measure something that is really more of a discussion and bringing points of view to the executive branch that may not reach that level of discussion any other way. Having said that, we would like to see more progress in what the rural communities are concerned about, what their real needs are in a broader sense, both at that level and in the legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try and stand up. Pull the I guess the one thing that I was a little bothered by in your testimony, Representative Boone, is the multitude of emails that we're probably all getting, and I can tell you that we aren't all getting multitudes of emails. So if this is, and maybe just because you're on the board or something, but if these are emails of interest to educate us legislators, we aren't on a list. So I just wanted to bring that point up.
And thank you. I think maybe that is the problem. Maybe because I'm on the committee, but I see how it goes to state agencies, and I mean it's a huge list. So I'm sure that could be remedied for you.
I want to tie together what Senator Johnson is talking about.
Thank you, Representative Byers.
And Senator Vick,
you're very kind.
We'll see to it that you get some emails now. I think I want to pursue that a little bit. The distance in my district, and if a meeting is held in John Day, which may be centrally located for House District 59, probably Fossil more so, I'm 120 miles away. And we'll get you some emails. It may take us a minute or two.
Don't get too big a rush.
Yeah.
I want to thank Dr. Bates. I think you understand what we're trying to say. It is hard to prove, and it's... I also understand Senator Johnson's concerns, too, about producing something for the money. And I don't know how you measure goodwill, and trust, which takes a long time to build, but there's a lot of that, too, because a lot of the people on the committee serve different interests. You know, we have Steve Eldridge, who represents energy and power issues, and it's been very instructive to me to get his information from his point of view, from his side of the state, and the whys. And there are also people I can call upon and say, what do you think of this bill? This is what we're doing here. How does this affect you? And so it's been a huge, you know, connection, too, in that sense.
I see. Go ahead.
Before they go, do you have a work plan?
You know, there is. Yeah. There is a work plan, and they have produced the end piece. It's kind of like the Salmon and Streams Restoration Group that was out there, reports to the legislature, and I think it's being compiled or it's done now.
So is there one or isn't there one?
Yeah, there is. Okay. At Rural Oregon Day, I think they outlined the process or the progress of that. It wasn't finished yet. So I will ask Jim to get that to you.
I think if my vision serves me correctly, and rumor is correct on this, that we have two distinguished members of the Oregon Senate that may be here to talk about the same issue. If I'm in error on that, give me the appropriate body language. If I'm not in error, would you change places with the two representatives and let us hear from you?
Thank you, Chairman Jensen, and thank you, committee, for your patience.
Thank you. Thank you both for your very moving testimony. Senator Brzezinski?
No problem.
There is one thing I must make before comment. I must make before this begins. And I don't know whether it makes, you know, heartens me or whether it doesn't. But it does seem like, at least as far as testimony before this committee, that we have finally found a bipartisan issue. We started out with a Democrat representative and a Republican representative, and we now have a Democratic senator and a Republican senator. And I don't know of anything else, really, that has transpired in front of this committee, at any rate, that has brought up this much of a bipartisan testimony for us. So, but I'm not sure where the senators are going. So.
And that's my idea, so let's be careful here.
Yes, I'm going to be a little cautious with that. Good morning. At your pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Floyd Brzezinski, State Senator, District 4, which includes a large portion of eastern Lane and Douglas County, as well as part of the central South Lane and north central Douglas County. I am here in support of retaining and maintaining the Office of Rural Policy, and I'm asking this committee, based on what I've heard from the two representatives, to move forward and keeping the position. I think the points that have been made by this committee as to having some type of performance measures are appropriate. I do believe that that office actually serves, from my perspective, as what we normally would see in some, I guess, belief as an ombudsman's type of position of allowing a place where individuals, be it counties, be it local officials, or be it individual constituents, can actually dial in to state government and actually have a means of actually being within the executive office and branch as compared to the legislative branch that they can access through each of us if they are our own constituents. I understand the concerns as to how much is a symbol versus how much is actual performance. Clearly, there's means of measuring that, and I think as the Vice Chair Johnson has brought forward by having performance measures, and I would say that they could actually just take their daily schedules as to what they actually have done, have some summaries and working and showing what type of projects or guidance they have done as to how it has impacted on the executive branch would be important. I have constituents who have contacted me, so I am getting some of the emails, and based on their concerns and my belief as to what this office can do, and should continue to have the opportunity to do as it's coming through its infancy stage, I would ask that this committee find a way to keep that and retain that office at least for another 2 years and allow them to demonstrate that they can, in fact, meet the performances that this committee and we as a legislature need to be held accountable for. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Burns.
State Senator Ted Farrioli, District 30, and I just think it's extraordinary. It's a true observation that some people can be so far to the left and some people can be so far to the right that they actually overlap. And I think that's what you might have plenty of today. I don't come from rural Oregon. You know, some of you come from rural Oregon. The Oregon I come from actually fits the federal definition of frontier. It's less than six persons per square mile is the federal definition of frontier. And with my district at 34,000 square miles and approximately 120,000 people, you can do the math for yourself. We'd have to exponentially grow in population to hit rural. Part of the district's in a different time zone. The borders of my district are Washington, Idaho, and Nevada. So, you know, the issue of the Office of Rural Policy for us is mostly in potential. It's mostly in helping to develop potential and also to have a mechanism to explain unintended consequences. For instance, I mean, we've got legislation floating around this building, and I don't know where you fall in any individual piece of it, but metering wells in rural Oregon is an issue that just makes people crazy. And the idea that somebody would, you know, legislatively suspend the half acre foot of domestic use water that comes with every piece of property is just like, whoa, that's like nutty. And there are water quality limited areas, and there are water study areas that we need to pay attention to. But mostly those are population questions. You know, mostly those are pressure questions that derive from rapid growth. And other than Sage Brush and Jackrabbits, rapid growth is not a big problem in a lot of my district. So, you know, what happens in the Office of Rural Policy is we get a chance to push back on ideas that sound great and look great in an area where you've got significant population pressures, but don't sound very good and don't look very good in places where that is not a problem. A lot of discussions over open space are things that people have difficulty getting their mind around from rural Oregon, because we don't lack it. You know, we kind of like to fill stuff up over there, you know, jobs and opportunity. Leadership training is a real need. And the Office of Rural Policy brings leaders together where they get to exchange ideas, and it's a two-way communication. Bringing those leaders together, starting the working relationships or continuing them, giving people a venue, and then identifying gaps in either services or opportunities or leadership training. You know, those things are utterly indispensable and very difficult to measure. The Office of Rural Policy actually started as a grassroots idea that came from a group of folks scattered across rural Oregon who came together as the Eastern Oregon Rural Alliance. And they brought this idea for a mechanism to deal with rural problems and to communicate them to our urban counterparts in the legislature and the governor's office. And we framed the legislation. We had more than 20 senators as sponsors and more than 30 House members as sponsors. And the governor came through the governor's office, through the staff, and said, you know, don't do this legislatively. We know you got the votes to pass this thing. Let's do it in the governor's office with an executive order. And the reason for that is we want to have as close a ties as possible. You know, this is, if this is going to be a policy venue, then the governor's office should be intimately involved with that policy venue. And that sounded like a good idea to me. We vetted it back to the Eastern Oregon Rural Alliance, and they thought that the governor's word was significant enough to take on face value. If he committed to it, we'd have it. The executive order was signed, and unfortunately there was a budgetary glitch you may have heard of earlier today that delayed funding for a year. Then we did a one-year search for personnel. So of the four-year lifespan, this thing's only really been up and running for about 2 years. And admittedly, some of the ideal hasn't been achieved. It doesn't mean that the potential isn't there. What it means is that we need to focus our vision and work harder to make it real. So I think there's a lot of stuff we can do with the Office of Rural Policy that will develop and enhance and bring to fruition some of the potentials of cooperation between urban and rural. That's what the whole thing's aimed at, is better cooperation between urban and rural. So, you know, you have a great opportunity to either reinforce the message or send a message. And you're smart enough to figure out what the messages are here, so I won't go ahead and reiterate them.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Whitson and Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Senator Farrelly, you mentioned the exempt wells and water measurement bills. To my knowledge, the Office of Rural Policy has not weighed in on those subjects.
Yeah.
The Secure Rural Schools and Communities Act, to my knowledge, the agency hasn't weighed in on that policy. The Long Lake Project in Klamath is a storage, major storage, 500,000 acre foot storage potential that we've been talking about that for 10 years. The governor's office, at least at the Mike Carrier level, did not know about that project until they visited my office this session. The John Day Dam pool scheme to lower the pool on the John Day Dam, which would have, I'm told, also have required lowering the pools all the way down the river on the main stem, would have cost rural Oregon untold millions of dollars in lost low power. To my knowledge, they didn't weigh in on that subject. The coastal reserves and the coho plant on the Oregon coast, to my knowledge, and you can correct me if you am wrong, but to my knowledge, they haven't weighed in on those policies. So the perception is a good perception, but in your mind, how do we make it work?
Great question, and I guess the answer to me seems very simple. I don't want state agencies being weighing in on political issues. But this organization, I want them to share that information out with people and to do the analysis on the consequences of those issues. I'm supposed to weigh in on those issues. You're supposed to weigh in on those issues. And our constituents are supposed to be made aware to weigh in on those issues. But as far as using the Office of Rural Policy as anything other than a sounding board or an information gathering organization or a research organization, I don't know that we could actually use them to express a political point of view. I mean, that's not what state agencies are really supposed to do.
Mr. Chair,
I follow up. Please,
Senator Farrelly, I wasn't suggesting that they should have a set political policy. What I was suggesting was that they should weigh in as far as this is a significant urban-rural divide issue. Each of those is in those, and I think you know, that's from east to west and from north to south in that list. How do we get the agency to perform is the question.
Yeah, and if I may, Mr. Chair, I would say that that's all about the leadership and the board members. you know, making these issues significant and raising those issues. All of those issues have been discussed. All of them have been vetted in that venue. But the question is, have the board members asked for a policy to be voted on that issue or a recommendation to be made? So if there's, if there's a different product we want out of the Office of Rural Policy, that's within our power to get. And I think it has to do with the vision thing and how committed people are on the board and how much time they're willing to put into this thing. And I will tell you that the most important element of all this discussion is, how well does the governor listen? How are those, you know, is it clear to the people who are engaged in the Office of Rural Policy on the board level and then in the community level that what they do there gets heard? That's the key. If you want to prime that pump, you know, if there was a strong indication that the governor listens to the Office of Rural Policy, I think you'd see measurable products that folks have been asking here for here today.
Senator Johnson.
I would respectfully disagree and not make this about the governor. Before you came in the room, I was trying to feel out the difference between the symbology of the office and the performance. And it really is performance. This morning, the Coastal Caucus met on a pretty important issue, marine reserves. We had senators and House members, Republican and Democrat. I would expect an activist Office of Rural Policy to muscle their way into the Coastal Caucus, to be looking for opportunities to make sure that they're completely apprised on the varying points of view. I don't want them to be advocates. I subscribe to that theory with you. But in a zero-sum game, if I had $400,000 or $3,000, whatever the number is, to spend, would I spend it on this Office of Rural Policy? I don't know what they do. They haven't been to see me on any issues, and I represent rural places. I was on the Office of Rural Policy Advisory Board. And I think what it boils down to is, what's our expectation? And when you all in Eastern Oregon, the Eastern Oregon Rural Alliance, formed the office, you must have had an expectation of what role they were going to play. Was this to facilitate contacts between urban people and rural people? Was it an activist person in the governor's office to just constantly be tapping the governor on the back, going, remember about this, remember about this? Was it to form alliances? Was it to invite Dr. Goldberg out to see Representative Dahlem's district? I don't know what the expectations were, but at the end of the day, when I look at all the need that we have across a whole bunch of issues, and I see $400,000, and I say, what are we buying for it? And there's not much there. And so I would invite you all that were instrumental in forming this to help sort of define what's deliverable. And it's my impression from what little I know about the office that they took on everything. And maybe some discipline in the office to say we're going to work on water, or we're going to work on informing the land use debate. Or, I mean, through all the Measure 37 stuff that happened this session, I never heard from the Office of Rural Policy say, and I was a member of the committee, did you think about this? And so I'm just trying to figure out, I fully subscribe to the idea the governor ought to have a rural policy advisor, but I'm just trying to figure out, where's the performance?
Mr. Chair, I and members of the committee, I don't disagree with anything you've said, Senator Johnson. I believe that that is the question that needs to be laid before this body and legislators who are connected to the Office of Rural Policy. I will tell you that I have developed somewhat a new understanding and sympathy for agency heads that have come before this and other subcommittees after a period of truncation and contraction of budgets to say, well, you know, that's, we'd really love to do that. We wanted to do that, but here's the problem. For the first 2 years of this thing, we didn't know whether it was real or not. Because, we had trouble getting it funded. And there were some glitches. We had, you know, looked to place somebody, and then ourselves in the board of directors were trying to do exactly what you say. Not try to embrace the universe, but bring this thing down to something that's doable. We spent probably 6 months in seeking mission and trying to figure out what our direction should be. And so, you know, here we are, arrived at a place where we have a tool. It doesn't look like it does very much, and I tell you, I think it's all in the potential end. I would like to see this board continued, and I'd like to see people do a little of the soul searching that needs to be done to decide how to get the best a return on the investment that we're about to make here. There's some grant money here. This Office of Rural Policy is funded beyond the biennium with some dollars. Perhaps what we need to do is have the discussion that needs to go on here and figure out how to move forward on this thing, because I believe that there's possibilities here that are untapped.
Mr. Chair, could I make one more comment? If I were the CEO of a company that had had a pretty rambunctious shareholders meeting where the shareholders are saying, we're not getting any value here, I think I'd want to go back to my board and sit down with them and say, guys, what we're selling, they ain't buying. And maybe we got a reprieve out of this session, but we better figure out how to be value added and not hit the ball, drag the office, hit the ball, drag the office. And I think this debate here, the very fact that we're gathered together, ought to be a wake-up call to the advisory board and the incumbent in the office to say, how do we make ourselves so invaluable that the legislature would think twice before passing legislation, and that all of us would look in our bill file and say, oh, God, this is a rural issue. Where's the policy piece from the Office of Rural Policy? And if one guy can't do it alone, let's admit that we're setting out to have him fail. And if the board comes back and says, we really need a point guy, we need a point guy, we need a travel guy, we need some secretarial support, we need a car to get out to Eastern Oregon, we need whatever, then let's be serious about it. But I think to put a guy in a position where he's going to fail de facto, we have him in here for the every other year flogging, it doesn't make any sense to me at all. So either there's value added and we give this thing the tools it needs, or let's be serious about wasting $400,000.
And Mr. Chair, if I might respond to that, Senator Johnson was precisely why you were appointed to the board. And I will say that if I were the general manager and I had that meeting where the CEO said those things to me, the last thing I would do is burst into tears and run out of the room. The first thing I would do is say, okay, now I understand the precise things that we need to be doing. And at the end of that process, if it were up to me, legislators of every stripe and of all geographic distributions would be digging in their files for the recommendations from the board of the Office of Rural Policy.
I mean, I can think of some issues that if I looked at...
Okay.
Sorry.
Further?
No, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a question to both of you, and understand that I don't really live in a rural area, but and so maybe wouldn't be contacted by it. But I guess I'd like to know how many times you have been contacted by this office, or how many times you have contacted this office on issues in your district.
Was that a question for me?
It was for both of you. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Representative Beyer, I get a blizzard of stuff from the Office of Rural Policy. So the first question I'm going to ask our staff is...
Senator.
Yes.
The folks on the website don't know what a blizzard is. So
oh, I'm sorry.
Hey, come on. We haven't worked
I get a boatload. I get a boatload. So I'll make a mud illusion. Okay. I get a boatload.
It's a mudslide.
But what I think is interesting is that, you know, the folks that are connected with the Office of Rural Policy are the last people that need the information. It's the other folks that aren't that need it. So the fact that you may not be getting a boatload of information, that's distressing, and I heard your comment earlier about that. I agree with you. You know, the part of the targeting that needs to be done is that people that don't confront the issues that we do. That's the beauty of this thing, is we're trying to share that information. So if you're not getting it, you will.
Mr. Chair, may I ask just a very...
She's got another response coming, I think.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beyer, I would say mine's been more limited than what Representative Farioli has experienced.
And the Senator, Senator.
Excuse me, Senator Farioli has received. But I have received some, and it has been more... I guess what I say and say limited, sporadic, but it has given me focus on certain issues that have come up. I was trying to think of some besides being in the legislative process that we're in right now. There's been some during the interim period, but frankly, it's been limited. But at the same time, I think it's one that, after listening to Senator Farioli as to its track record of how long it took really to get off the ground, it's understandable as to why I think many of us have not had as much engagement just because of the need to have a firm footing for the office and the personnel.
Okay. Representative Crummell.
I'm finished. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of you, and I don't remember which one, mentioned something about an ombudsman, and my experience with our ombudsmans in various agencies to this point has been pretty much a lack of service and accountability. But with all of that said, and I understand not necessarily wanting to have the person be an advocate or being and that sort of thing, but wouldn't it be helpful if we at least understood the governor's position on some of these rural issues? And also, as Senator Johnson was mentioning, you know, tapping the governor on the back and saying, you know, about this and making recommendations to the governor. If there's a bill that comes through that's just really goofy for rural Oregon, to maybe suggest that he might want to veto it or let leadership know that it's not something that he's looking favorably on. I mean, and I guess the other thing that I would just mention, and then you can respond, is I mean, the fact that we're talking about eliminating this office, and I don't see the person here even trying to justify their existence. I guess I have a problem with that.
Maybe I should go first. Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell. I use the phrase or term ombudsman, and what I meant by that is a model in the sense of that individual serving as that point for the policy as to making certain, as you're saying, with the governor. And that's, you know, a central location where that the concerns from rural Oregon can come, and then they can be shepherded from there into the executive branch, meaning to directly to the head of the executive branch, the governor. I think that's one of those things that is a means, because it only seems appropriate that if you have an office within the governorship that's supposed to be on rural policy, that the governor is going to be briefed and receiving whatever type of correspondence that they would have in their cabinet to make certain that that perspective of rural Oregon is represented at the table and is documented.
And, Mr. Chair, in response to Representative Crummell, I envisioned and had hopes of having a cabinet-level bulldog. You know, somebody who would say, you know, if you proceed in the direction you're going to go, you're going to fall in a big hole, and here's the pushback you're going to get. You know, here are the things that you will encounter. And not that you would veto somebody's policies, but at least inform folks. You know, if you're about to stumble into a hole, it's nice to have the information that you're going to fall in a hole. And you don't have to if you don't want to, but if you do, at least you intended to go there. So, yeah, I think there's some, you know, there's some untapped potential here, and perhaps it has to do with our expectations and how well we communicated them. But I have to tell you, I think Senator Johnson hit the nail when she said what we've been doing is hitting the ball and dragging the office. And I think our problem is we haven't known which direction we're hitting the ball. You know, I'd like to stop dragging the office, though.
I think we have two other legislators here that I assume are wanting to talk about the same issue. And I don't mean to put the questions off.
Oh,
to
one
the
thing
Senator.
We can do, Mr. Chairman, is talk.
we would like to have and we're going to run a little short on time. I think you folks in the Senate have got a roll call here in about 20 minutes. And
thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you
Mr.
very
Chair
much,
and
for, and I appreciate very much your testimony. Representative Smith got away from me, but Representative Butler is here, and if Representative Smith comes back in, we'll bring him up.
I'm sure he'll be back, Mr. Chair.
I suspect he will. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representatives and Senators. I'm Tom Butler from House District 60 in southeastern Oregon, and I see between Senator Ferrioli, Senator Whitsitt, and myself, we represent the most rural places in the entire state of Oregon. As I've told you before, my House District is 25% plus of the landmass of the state of Oregon. It takes 59 representatives to take care of the other 75% of the state of Oregon. While I am concerned about the proposal that we do away with the Office of Rural Policy and the governor's office as a cabinet-level position, I just bring back to you where we were before we had that position in this executive level office. And it really became acute with me when in the city of Nissa, where Highway 20 and 26 start in the state of Oregon, that we were having policies implemented on the way that they were building so that you couldn't have more than one access per business, and each business may take up a couple of blocks. And when I asked about the policy, why we were doing it that way, they said, well, this is Highway 26 after all, and Highway 26 runs through Beaverton. And because it runs through Beaverton, we have to have that policy on Highway 26. So one size should fit one, not one size fits all. And so I just asked at that time, and this was a long time ago when I was a freshman legislator, a long, long time ago, I said, where does that policy come from? And the policy came from a series of materials that had been developed by the administrative rule process, largely here in Salem, largely over a long time period. So then the question I came back, if it fits that way for Beaverton, how many times in the policy manual, and they brought me the policy manual, it's very thick, how many times in the policy manual does it talk about where these issues are rural? How many accesses can we have when Highway 20 or Highway 26 peels off on a farm and those kinds of things? Do I have just one access per farm that might run 3 or 4 miles along the highway, or can I get the cows out at the same, or do I have to get the cows out at the same place I get my cars and pickups and trucks and hay wagons in? And they just did not have rural policy, and so the concern was, I don't need an Office of Rural Policy as long as all of the manuals of how to in the state of Oregon address, and in rural Oregon, we will do it this way. Because nowhere in the manual did it talk about rural Oregon. It talked about all of the problems of access, and this is transportation, obviously, talked about all of the problems relative to transportation issues in downtown Beaverton and other large growing communities, but nothing about rural Oregon or where we are in areas of distress. And I know that as I look around the room, there are folks here that represent rural Oregon, more on the Senate side than yourself, Mr. Chair. But I am most anxious that if we do anything with this office, that we also then come back and address our administrative rule process, that it must, in all future administrative processes and hearings, take into account what happens in rural Oregon, not just one size fits all. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Vice Chair, for the record, I'm Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct pleasure of representing District 57, which includes Union and Wallowa and Morrow, and what I like to say the best parts of Umatilla County.
Thank you, Representative.
Which means I will never be able to run for the Senate now.
it will be noted in the Hermiston Herald. And,
just very briefly, colleagues, I just want to share my thoughts on the Office of Rural Policy. And before I do that, let me digress and say, Vice Chair Johnson, I strongly agree with your comments. If we were a corporation and what were being presented was presented the way it is, I'd be scratching my head. I remember 2 years ago sitting approximately where you two are sitting, and there was a huge rah-rah of we have this opportunity for the Office of Rural Policy, and we came in and we said, let's fund it. We must fund it. We funded it, and we sent the folks off. What we didn't do, and I assume a tremendous amount of this responsibility, is we didn't put parameters on what we wanted the Office of Rural Policy to do and how to report back to us. We didn't have that discussion. And I think it's a failing of myself from last session, and I'm hoping you folks will take this opportunity to take a strong look at the position and say, should we keep it? What do we want this position to do? Now, let me share with you why I have such strong support for this office. I view myself as an extension of my counties. I work very closely with my county commissioners. I view them as part of me and I as part of them. And they see value in this position. They work on a regular basis with the Office of Rural Policy. They're able to come together and coordinate their thoughts, their ideas, their opinions, and to put some action steps together. I could give you one or two examples of that that I know have occurred right in my backyard. And I think there's tremendous value in that, and I support that. I would ask that you folks step up, that you put together the necessary financial resources to continue this position. I would also ask that you folks take a hard look at helping to define what the position is, what we expect from the position, and what are the necessary resources that are needed to make it happen. Senator Johnson hit it right on the head. We need to know what is it going to take for this office to succeed, and then you as policymakers, as budgeteers, need to decide, are you willing to put those resources in it to make that happen? So I just want you to know I support the position. At the same time, I support the notion of putting some parameters on this office and deciding what is it we want the office to do, and is it an investment we ought to make. In my opinion, the answer is yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions for the two representatives?
And Mr. Chair, if I just might add, this office has been very, very responsive to the issues in rural Oregon since it's been in place. When we've had problems getting, right now we have an ambulance problem. That is, the ambulances are being dispatched from Idaho. They would like to dispatch from Oregon, but there is a rural issue that gets in the way. It's a statewide issue, but it becomes a rural issue in rural Oregon. The office has always been extremely responsive to those issues that we've brought forward. And the current party that's in possession of the leadership there has always been very responsive to our concerns when we've contacted the office for their outreach. So we've got a good thing, and I hope that we'll be able to continue to fund it. Thank you.
Thank you. Off the center momentarily. I think our work session and comments are appropriate, but I think we're pushing our envelope of time. The Senate's going to have to leave here in a few minutes, and we do have another issue to bring up, but would you see...
She's just making a phone call next door.
Okay. Mr. McKenzie, if you can, 5 minutes, is that going to be sufficient for you to explain your case?
Sir.
Please, this is a different issue, different topic.
May I bring Commissioner Hyde with me?
That's of course. But of course.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, whether we should allow Commissioner Hyde to come with him or not.
If there are objections on the part of members of the committee, why I would
Let me think about it. No, it's okay. I won't object, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mike MacArthur, Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm here to speak to the governor's budget. The item has to do with the funding for the office and the function of the economic revitalization team. Mike MacArthur, Executive Director, Association of Oregon Counties. And I'm here to speak about the Economic Revitalization Team and the way it's funded, the governor's budget. Take you back a little bit. When the state built the prison in Ontario, Snake River, there were unintended consequences of that large 3,000-bed facility going into a rural community. And the governor determined that it made sense to send representatives of multiple state agencies out to deal with those problems. And thus was born the Community Solutions Team. And that was in about 96, 97. The Community Solutions Team was made up of members of representatives of agencies of housing, transportation, economic development, and so on. That model worked well. and it was incorporated into the report given by the Interim Work Group on Economic Development. The idea was that agencies shouldn't work in silos, that there should be a way for agencies to work together to stop the interference that happens when one agency overrules another, for instance. So that moved along and eventually became known as the Economic Revitalization Team. Well, those teams were working with regional partnerships throughout the 90s, early part of this this century, and during the economic downturn, it became difficult to fund that function. Budgets were struggling with ways to fund that, and there was actually proposed, like you just discussed with the Office of Rural Policy, to eliminate that function. The counties, in partnership with the Community Development Forum, suggested that we fund it with some of the regional economic development money that was available at the time to keep it going, because we thought it was a valuable function. And so during the 03 biennium, that was the way it was funded. Last session, the co-chairs were still looking for additional funding for programs. They reached out to the county video lottery source and used the county's share of video lottery. Half of the Office of Economic Revitalization Team was funded from county's video lottery share. The agreement was it would be done one time. And in fact, we went so far as to request that the money come out of the first year of the biennium. Now, I was promised by the governor's office that that would not continue. Unfortunately, it did continue in the governor's budget. I was told it was a technicality, that because it was the way it was funded in the last budget, it was advanced forward into this budget. The co-chairs continued that practice. We think it's inappropriate that counties should be paying for a state function. And given the fact that you've got a revenue forecast up $152 million, $50 million of that being set aside, let's use some of that to fund a state function rather than dipping into the county's share of video lottery, which is a source that many counties find very valuable for a number of variety of important programs at a time when county resources are really, really strained. Commissioner Hyde, I think, would like to make a few comments about the function of the office. Mr. Hyde.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tony Hyde, County Commissioner in Columbia County, also a member of the Oregon Economic and Development Commission. With regards to the Office of Economic Revitalization, when the current governor took office, he changed the name from Community Solutions Team to the governor's Economic Revitalization Team. And unfortunately, the acronym left everybody with the impression that they were an extension of Columbia Sportswear, with GERT as the acronym. So it immediately changed to ERT. The important thing about that acronym, as it was originally with this current governor, is that it was a state function, and it very clearly said governor's Economic Revitalization Team. So this is a double-edged sword for us in the counties, in that we see the value of ERT. This is two things that ERT does for the state of Oregon. One, it's the most valuable piece that we have with regards to economic projects, because you have all of your agencies that come together with a different mindset. The mindset isn't, what do we do, or what is it you have to do, and how can we tell you what you can't do? It's more, how can we get around this project and tell you how you can do it? So it's a change in the mindset of the agencies, where they work as a collective team. And the second thing that's really important for the state of Oregon with regards to ERT is that it's probably the finest PR piece that you have in the state. I mean, time and time again, both on a local level and a state level, we get hit with bureaucracies being in cubicles, and they really don't care about anything other than regulation, and that's all they really focus on is regulation. That's not what happens with ERT. They get their arms around the project, and they make it happen, not by bending the rules, but by advocating the rules. It's a very important project. On the other hand, it's a state function and not a county function. And we see the value in state prisons with regards to our citizens. They're very important. That doesn't mean that the county should be paying for state prisons either. And it's kind of the same issue. So we do not want to see ERT go away in any way, shape, or form. It's incredibly valuable, both for the state and for the citizens of the state. but we don't want to pay for it. And when it came to a point where there was such a severe economic downturn that the counties needed to roll their sleeves up and help the state get these functions done, we did that. That's not the climate today. That's all I have.
Representative Connell.
Mr. Chair, thank you. First, I need to set the record straight. Commissioner Hyde and I go back a long ways. We were both mayors at the same time and friends in the Oregon Mayors Association. So giving him a little gas about being up here, I'm really happy to see him here and very much appreciate your comments. But now that staff has left,
That'll give you more liberty.
No, it doesn't. Actually, I have a question for staff because in the recommendations, it says under number one, it says positions currently paid by other agencies, and it says establish and fund one position, director economic revitalization team, and it says increase lottery funds expenditure limitation by 266. Is that out of the county's money that normally flows to the county for?
We'll get that answer.
And so that's my question.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We're going to stand for a moment at ease while we're waiting for Senator Johnson. Before doing that, however, we will close the work session on House Bill 5026 and reschedule at a later posted date. We still have some negotiations going on, obviously, with this whole budget, and we'll hopefully get those straightened out. And with that, then, welcome back, Senator. Welcome here to now opening a work session on House Bill 2901. And if there's anyone who is not aware or forgets, we did amend House Bill 2901 in the last session that we had on the 5th, and we added the -3 amendments to it, so House Bill 2901 now is 2901A.
B.
Excuse me.
It will be. Yes.
That's right. And then there were other proposed amendments, the -4s and -5s. The proponents and others kind of took the subtle hint that the committee gave them to go to the Senate side and take, I think it's 2140, House Bill 2140, and pull it back to committee and amend that bill there on the Senate side with the -4s or -5s or whichever is appropriate. And so we're looking at simply the clean bill, 2901B, and the chair would entertain a motion to move 2901B to the...
Actually, it would be 2901 and recommend it be amended and be passed.
Yeah, 2901.
With the amendment.
As amended.
No, with the amendment.
With the amendment. Okay, thank you. 2901 with the amendment to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2901 with the -3 amendments to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. And just recognizing for the record that the -3s were the bonding... just provided funds to the Treasurer's Office for the function.
The bill.
Right. Just provided funds to the Treasurer's Office.
Okay. Are we all clear? Are there any discussion? Is there any discussion?
My only discussion point, Mr. Chair, is that I am glad to support the bill, and I'm glad to support only the A3 amendments. I believe that it is most appropriate for the other amendments to be put into the other bill that has been discussed. So,
we're pleased that the proponents of those bills did choose to take that suggestion, and that apparently the Senate President has agreed to go along with it, so that issue is free of ours. Is there any other discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We need a House carrier, I guess I'll carry to the full Ways and Means, Senator Whitsitt, would you do the honors on the Senate floor, and I'll carry the House.
Okay. I was going to suggest, Mr. Chair, that maybe Representative Butler would like to carry it, since it's...
As a matter of fact, that's an excellent suggestion, and thank you very much. Let's put Representative Butler down. This is his bill.
Okay.
And if there's a question with that, resolve it on the floor or something.
Yep.
With that, we are. Thank you very much, members.